Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. There's Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Monday before the trade deadline. Monday, first day of a three-game series against the National League East leading New York Mets. Monday, after a long trip through Satan's armpit. I am happy to be back. Ryan, where would you like to start?
I'd like to start with that road trip. You know, Kevin lost a few here, but this is a 5-5 road trip that to me felt like a little bit of a victory given the way the Padres finished.
That was it. I mean, that's what's funny about it, right? Like had they lost the last two, they won the first two in St. Louis, lost the last two, had the same record, might have felt different, right? Because, oh, would have had this chance to separate themselves or whatever. But 100%, man, there's no way, because this is a daily game, to look at it other than, okay, what happened, happened. They won their last two. They came out and they routed the Cardinals on the last day. You have to look at it positively, because you'll just drive yourself nuts if you go back and you look at that. Last Monday, they were 3.5 games up on the Reds, Giants, and Cardinals, and now they're just a game up on the Reds. Look, that's how it was going to be. Like, none of these teams are great, and we'll see after the trade deadline what they look like, but, like, this is going to probably be intense down to the end. Padres play the Mets. I got to tell you, and I know we'll get into the Mets later when Brian rejoins us, but, like, again, they have a plus 55 run differential. They've got some really good players. This guy named Juan Soto, who will probably come in here and rake, even though he hasn't been raking. No one has been. I don't understand how they've won seven games in a row. I think they're like the Padres. If you looked at how, if they won seven games in a row somehow during this, that they, you know, barely winning. And, you know, how did they do it? They got good pitching, decent pitching. They've got almost nobody's like killing it on offense. I think Soto's hitting 160 during this time. I don't know how the Mets have won seven in a row, but overall, they are a good team with good hitters. They've had terrible pitching luck. No idea how they're putting this together. We got Frankie Montas, who began the season on the 60-day IL. Absolutely horrible. They put off bringing him back from his rehab assignment because he was so bad in AAA. He's been okay since he come up. Sean Manaea, former Padres pitcher. Gosh, I thought he was done when he was with the Padres. And, you know, been killing it for the Mets. Had some elbow issues. Was out for a time. He's back. I think this is his fourth start back. Clay Holmes will be starting against the Mets. The former Yankees closer. So he's pulling Michael King. And doing pretty well. Not as well as Michael King. But I think it's like a 3.5, 3.4 ERA. Making his 22nd start. We don't know who the Padres starters are. Dylan Cease tonight. Probably pushing Yu Darvish back a day. To bring up Ryan Burgert possibly and to start on Tuesday. Sorry, I was just checking to see if we were going to get Ryan back at any point here. Still don't know, so I'm just vamping, hopefully giving some information. So Dylan Cease, and then for the Padres is TBD, TBD. It would have been Dylan Cease, Yu Darvish, Nick Pivetta on turn. Probably just push Yu Darvish back one day and then have a day off Thursday, which is the trade deadline, and then go to Nick Pivetta on Friday against the Cardinals. Though, could push Yu back. Now, of course, when you push Yu Darvish back, you're naturally wondering, is Yu Darvish okay? My understanding is he is. The fact is, look, he came back. He's made his starts on, well, at least this last one was on 4 days. I think maybe there were 5 days before the between one and two. But the fact is, just give him an extra day, and you know, they think he's just figuring out how to pitch again, in a sense of when to use his pitches, obviously his command. Ryan, I've already been over the Mets and I've been through the Padres rotation. So cross those off your list and welcome back. And where would you like to go?
Yeah, trade deadline. Obviously, that's okay. Going to be the big story this week. We could probably spend an hour talking about their needs and how we see this shaking out. Kevin, we've known for a while what we think they need. Are we adding or subtracting from that shopping list as we head into Thursday?
No, it's get a right-handed bat, get some depth in the lineup. I mean, it's just You just have to, and that's what they think they can do. Now, look, I think they had until the middle of the week, maybe their sights set on Jaren Duran from Boston, and it doesn't look like they've had injuries there that's going to happen. Don't know. I've said it all along that the Padres had what it took to get Duran. But that's where they would like to go. That level of player, not a Luis Robert Jr. That's not to say that he won't be the guy who ends up coming here, because you don't always get what you want, but a real live bat. And we've lost Ryan again. That makes them better, that allows them to push Gavin Sheets down, keep Jake Cronenworth down in the lineup. Heck, maybe keep Xander Bogaerts at six, but a bat that makes them better, not just somebody. And Ryan, while you were gone, I said, maybe they do just end up getting somebody, because you don't always get what you want. You have a shopping list, but they've got to get better. Then that puts that... they will look for a bench bat, or are looking for one, but that makes the bench better, because then maybe Gavin Sheets is coming off the bench, or other guys that have been playing sporadically are coming off the bench. But probably two bats. But again, who's going to take Dylan Cease? They don't have a lot of money. You know, they're already committed at like $223 million. When you take their payroll, which is ninth most in the major leagues, anticipated player bonuses, overages, tax on the competitive balance tax, like, I get it. The owners aren't going to spend more money, because the owners of the San Diego Padres are already spending a buttload of money. So this is important. And I wrote about it today, Ryan. Mm-hmm. I don't know where you're thinking, but that they do got to get better externally. But my gosh, do we need to keep saying it? They've got to get better internally.
Yep. And again, we talk about sort of the law of averages, about who you are on the back of your baseball card is sort of who you are, right? Gavin Sheets is coming back down to earth a little bit more. But, you know, you would think that playing those laws of averages, that the guys who have been stars throughout their career would start playing a little bit more like stars. The one guy who is Manny Machado, and he is on an absolute tear. We're seeing sort of one of those vintage Machado heaters, complete with some benches clearing and some back and forth. I thought a very eventful series for him in St. Louis.
Yeah, well, multiple hits now in five straight games. If it's a Manny tear, it will go on for another couple weeks. Though you could argue, I guess, you know, he had a couple games we didn't do much, but he had the big grand slam on Friday, the first game back from the break. So you could argue it started there. You could argue, as Mike Schilt would, that he's been, you know, their most consistent player all year. Yes, of course he has. But we're talking now, that's like consistent. We're talking now like superstar. This is why guys like Manny Machado get paid. It's not to like get three hits every night. It's not to hit 300, right? It is to be the guy that the team needs. And that's what they've done to the 20 playoffs, to the 22 playoffs, to a certain extent to the 24 playoffs. It's Manny Machado who has, in the second half, at least had a portion of that, and sometimes a great portion of it, be just phenomenal, be among the most productive players in the league. Obviously, Xander's hitting better, and that's big. Jackson looks a lot better. The results are better because they were horrible, but he looks better. Everyone is talking about it at the plate. Luis Arraez is on a 10-game hitting streak. Fernando is actually hitting the ball. Amazingly, his on-base percentage has stayed up, practically near four for a while, but he is starting to hit the ball. Things are looking up. I think it's remarkable that five times in the last 13 games, all five of those players have gotten at least one hit, when they had done it four times in like the previous 50 games. They're starting to come together.
Yeah, no, I agreed. And it's, I don't know, you look at some of the bench pieces too that have been stepping up and hitting. And I don't want to waste too much time on guys who don't play much, But my goodness, I think Bryce Johnson's been a revelation lately. It's a small sample size, but he's hitting over 300. This is a guy who, and you had a great note about him, knows his role, understands what is expected of him, and that is essentially defense and bunting and try to hit a single if there's nobody on base. And he's done a pretty good job of rising to that and sort of understanding where he fits on this team.
Yeah, and it's a tough role. And look, it's funny, you're right. Like, we're in a business where we should talk about what people are interested in a lot of the time, but I'm glad you brought it up because I have found myself, you know, the punters used to be filled with Bryce Johnsons, right? And it was like, that's what you did. And you got into the stories of what makes them, you know, major leaguers and all that. Like, and I find that fascinating. And then you get a team full of stars and that's who you end up writing about all the time. When, yeah, especially on a Mike Schilt team, where nothing gets Mike Schilt excited like a bunt and some good defense, then like, and Bryce Johnson's an important player. And the fact that he, you know, was not good last year and is a, in the eyes of many, and may well be a 4A player, because a 4A player's still one of the top 2% of players to ever walk the earth. You know, that's fantastic, but he is contributing to this team in a lot of ways that, that they find valuable, and to have done that from year to year after being, you know, non-tendered and being in the minor leagues for the Pirates, for goodness sake, you were in the minor leagues for a minor league team. And now you're contributing. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. And another guy who, for me, is appointment television when he's playing the field is Jose Iglesias. Made two plays in 2 days that are just, you're just going to have to look them up and watch them. A guy who, man, Kevin, when we talk about the Padres maybe having to part ways with somebody on the right side of their infield, whether it's their first baseman or their second baseman, my mind goes to, can Jose Iglesias play every day? I'll ask you, can he play every day on a playoff team?
Well, they've saved him to some extent, and obviously their defense, I would argue. And look, this is a statement here because they have a good infield, like second base, shortstop, third. And obviously everybody, you know, of course, Manny, wow, Cronenworth, yeah. Like Xander's played really good defense in his career, and he has this season. I think it's an upgrade at all three positions when Jose Iglesias is there defensively. You know, without any doubt whatsoever, they don't lose anything at those positions. So those are good players. So like he could. Now we've seen him do it this year, and the bat hasn't been great. He's obviously much better against lefties, and you know, depends on how many they see. So you'd be asking him to do it for 2 months. You get a lot of rest in the 2 months with days off. You'd be strategic about it. You know, if it's what you have to do to get better at other spots, right? Then it's a pretty good fallback.
Yeah, for sure. And as somebody who, you know, again, probably won't be wowed by the circumstances, somebody who's done everything in baseball, it seems, including last year, he played a big role for these Mets who are visiting town this weekend. Kevin, is there time to go over starting pitching? Have we gone over starting pitching?
We've gone over starting pitching.
Good. Let's talk about Juan Soto.
Yeah, good. Sure.
Let's talk about Juan Soto. First of all, what do you think the reaction or the reception will be tonight when the Mets arrive at Petco Park? And what do you think sort of his legacy is, both in the minds of fans and in the minds of the decision makers with the club?
Terribly, terribly disappointing to your last part. Look at what Juan Soto did for the Nationals, what he did for the Yankees, what he has sort of done, I mean, in terms of production. He actually was much better in some of his numbers with the Padres than they are with the Mets so far in, what, two-thirds of a season. But the Padres see it as terribly disappointing. They see it as, you know, he just wasn't the player that they had hoped they were getting. Now, listen, he was in large measure their best player in 2023, their least disappointing player. But the guy just, he wasn't a $30 million player. You had a team that was struggling. You had a runner on second with two outs, and Juan Soto was up there interested in getting a walk. No, you're Juan Soto, the or you go and you need to get a hit, Juan. You need to put the ball in play. And time after time, I don't know. I'm not in Juan Soto's head, but that's not what the Padres saw that they got. Now, let me say this. I think it's ridiculous some of the players in Padres history that have gotten booed when they come back here, you know, after being traded. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. Now, it happens other places. I don't know that it happens as much here. We've got some sort of inferiority, superiority complex. Why don't you love us? You should love us. I don't know what it is that we boo certain people. So I kind of always like either borderline laugh and then sometimes just like, this is so lame. So I don't take it that seriously. So I want to set that up to say, I would think Juan Soto's going to get booed out of the building tonight. I would think. And I would think it's justified.
Okay. Okay. In retrospect, why didn't the marriage work? Was it just a production thing or was there something else there?
$700 million. Yeah. It's really that simple. The idea that the Padres were going to be able to keep Juan Soto, that Juan Soto was somehow going to take $600 million, like $100 million less to stay here or something. Like, I don't care who lived or didn't, who was running the team or wasn't. The idea that Juan Soto was going to be here wasn't happening. I mean, I never thought that it was. It was a possibility, like in the way that it's possible I could fall off this chair right now. Like, I mean, that's bottom line. Now you want to get into some other things like, it didn't work out here. I'm being reluctant because I'm not going to place it all on Juan Soto at all, but it didn't work out here.
Right. That 2023 team had lots of flaws. And lots of leadership issues that have been well documented on this podcast. And Juan Soto, during all of that, was probably their best player.
Yep. On the field, and by the numbers, he was not what the Padres needed him to be. And look, when you're making that much money, you need to be what your team needs you to be.
Right. And you know who has learned that? I think is a little bit is Manny Machado, and maybe he's learned that the hard way. But, you know, there's been some sort of trial and error there, but it seems like he's comfortable speaking for the team because that's his role, you know?
And he's comfortable letting other guys lead in certain ways and him leading in certain ways and him. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could do a whole other podcast and I've talked about this a lot. What Manny Machado has evolved into is, I think, I want to make sure that I say it's one of the more impressive evolutions I've seen in a professional athlete, and B, what we should all be striving to be, which is with each passing year, with each passing day, figuring out how do we make ourselves and others around us better. I just think it's fantastic what Manny Machado is evolving into.
Yep. Kevin, and now I'm going to put you on the spot. I do this here at the end of every episode, and it's about Manny Machado a little bit. Take me through a little bit of the background between what I guess I will refer to as John Jay Gate.
Yeah. So there was not really, as far as I knew, and I mean, like anybody else knew either, anything but love between the Miami guys. I mean, that's one of those places where, you know, like if you're from the ATL or the Lou, 305 Miami, like you like that's ride or die, man. And Manny's ride or die. And boom. And so it's kind of like, oh wow, I wonder what John Jay said that was so bad, or that like, oh, in the moment, Manny just sort of lost it with his friend there. And then Manny was emphatic that they've had a falling out. And then Yonder Alonso, Manny's brother-in-law and best friend, tweeted out a emoji of a rat. In response to this incident with where if you weren't following, I doubt you'd listen to the podcast if you weren't following the game or haven't at least read about it or heard about it. after Manny got hit in the ninth inning on Saturday, second night, benches, bullpens clear, everybody's out. Manny's walking toward first base. Seems like, you know, teams are out there, but it's not a big deal. John Jay walks by, says something. That starts things up. A little bit of shoving, boom. Still was nothing, but John Jay, a former Padres player, played for a lot of teams, and is now a coach for the Cardinals. And I asked him yesterday, and he said, I don't have anything to say. I asked him specifically, you know, about Manny's comments, just because that's just the right thing to do. You have someone out there where Manny says no, basically he says, we're not friends. He says, I know the real him. Well, I got to get a quote from John Jay to make sure he has a chance to respond to that. And, that's it. We don't know look, there's some things, and it's always an interesting line that a journalist, I'm curious. It's interesting. Also, maybe it's none of our business.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's only interesting to me because guess who comes to town for the weekend?
Yeah.
Those very same St. Louis Cardinals. And these are two teams that have been hitting each other with a lot of pitches lately. The slide into second base to end Saturday night's game, I thought was a hard slide. And in the year 2025, not appreciated. To me, I wonder how much of this will bleed over into Thursday. And to be honest with you, how many Cardinals are still Cardinals on Thursday anyway, or Friday, as we head into past the All-Star break?
Yeah, I will say two organizations that run themselves a certain way. And I mean, in terms of the Cardinal way and then what Mike Schilt brought here, and I don't think there's going to be anything. That said, your points are valid. And my other point would be, you know, Padres are in a tight race here. They had to go out yesterday and take care of actual business, getting the win. And I think that'll be the case this weekend, but who knows? Wilson Contreras gets another one high and tight, which seems to happen basically every at bat. or Manny gets hit again, or, you know, Tatis, that's about all it would take to flare up.
No, it's very interesting. This is a huge week for the Padres. Trade deadline coming up on Thursday. Padres play two pretty good teams here, first with the Mets and then with the Cardinals, in a very short homestand here at Petco Park. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin, I know you've got a busy week and a busy day ahead of you, so I will let you go. Padres, Mets, 3-game series starting tonight at Petco. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.